What's up, football fans? And welcome to the NFL Roadshow and our very first look on this particular podcast at Super Bowl 56. We've got the two teams set now, looking at a Rams-Bengals showdown on February 13th, and we have a lot to talk about. How they got here, how they match up, what happens to the teams that didn't win. It's a lot. Plus, there's all that's going on with the quarterback in Tampa Bay, who is talking today on his Let's Go podcast. So I am going to purposefully avoid the topic of Tom Brady because I figure anything I say here is going to be outdated by the time that this podcast is actually out. So we're going to circle back to that subject on Thursday, and we're also going to do a deep dive on the Bengals and how they got here. And by the way, I'm thrilled that they are here. That team, so fascinatingly constructed, has so many interesting angles. I'll never forget interviewing Aditi Kinkabala last offseason in the buildup to the draft and asking like 800 Bengals questions and her laughing that I wanted to talk about the Bengals because, you know, it was a team that like nobody was talking about. Not that I saw this coming at all. That's not a way of patting myself on the back. It's just I thought specifically with regard to the draft and their fifth overall pick, they were probably the most interesting story in the AFC North at the time. I did think that they had a much better chance coming into the season than most people did, but I'm definitely not saying that like I thought that they were going to win a Super Bowl or go to a Super Bowl or anything like that. I think they've surprised all of us, particularly Vegas, who had them at 6.5 wins on the year. But anyway, thinking about all the Bengals fans, very excited for them. They've obviously been through a lot over the years. There is one Bengals fan in particular who I have been thinking about a lot in the last 24 hours, Chris Wessling, who I worked with for a very long time at NFL Media, who I think a lot of you know from the Around the NFL podcast. We lost him last February to cancer. And the fact that the Bengals are in the Super Bowl the year after he passes away, I think, is just such a heartwarming sign for a lot of us who loved him. This is a guy who loved the Bengals so much in his youth that he kept a file folder of reasons to break up with the team as a fan, like an official divorce that he was tracking with evidence of, I don't know, like reason, I guess. He was a very thoughtful and very interesting person. And everyone he met at NFL Media loved him so much. And also his wife, Lakeisha, who still works at NFL Media and is coincidentally a Rams fan. And she was someone that I thought about a lot last night once I learned that this was going to be a Rams-Bengals matchup. You should know that I'm sitting here in a Rams sweatshirt as we speak, because I'm also happy for my son and my husband, who are Rams fans, and happy for my former coworker, Kara Henderson Sneed, who is going to join me in just a moment to discuss the game last night and the team itself and some common misconceptions about the team. If you're not familiar with Kara, she covered the NFL for a very long time as a reporter and host. She actually used to host Total Access before I did, was one of the very first hires at NFL Network, and now she is married to Rams general manager Les Snead, and therefore experiencing this run to the Super Bowl in a different way than most of us ever will. And she very generously agreed to sit down with me after what I assume was a very eventful night of celebrating. I do need to tell you, Kara is like the star of one of my very most embarrassing moments on television. It was like 2008-ish. I was reporting from a game for NFL Network, throwing to her at another game. You know, one of those like, and for more on blah, 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 here's Kara Hernandez. I called her Kara Hernandez. Why did I call her Kara Hernandez? I will never know. I was reporting on a Patriots game. Maybe I had Aaron Hernandez on the brain. I don't even remember if he was a part of my story. Anyway, as soon as I said it and tossed to her like that with a name that is not her name, I was like off air and I immediately went like, what just came out of my mouth? And I cannot imagine still to this day what was going through her head. And I still die and want to crawl into a hole every time I think about it. But whatever, we're going to put that aside and talk to her about this team, about last night, And I'm really excited to get her perspective as the Rams prepare to be just the second team ever to play a Super Bowl on their home turf. Notably, the second in 2 years, of course, the Bucs having won in Tampa Bay last year. They were actually the home team in that game as designated by the NFL. The Rams will technically be the away team because of the way the NFL alternates that between AFC and NFC. So I guess that means they won't be in their own locker room, which is interesting. And it also makes them the first team to be an away team on their own turf at a Super Bowl. We are also going to hear from Gary Klein, who covers the team for the LA Times and has since they moved to Los Angeles. We'll get his thoughts on this season and the moment that he thinks they turned a corner in their quest to be one of the last teams standing. So again, lots coming up on the Bengals on Thursday. Today, though, the team that traded for their quarterback a year to the day before they won the NFC Championship, a move that Kara Snead witnessed up close and personal, and a championship that she is recovering from like a champ this morning. Let's break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
Two on two. Ready? Ready.
Kara! How much sleep are we working on right now?
I think calling it sleep would be a lot, Lindsay, because I would just say it's like a 4 hour sedation period.
Would another phrase be passing out?
Yeah, something along those lines. It is amazing, right? How much emotion these games and the adrenaline like hangover is almost as bad as the hangover itself. It is. It's so much fun. I mean, come on. I mean, it's so interesting to have seen it from the other side. And then when you're on the inside of it, and I had a moment last night with, one of my best friends, Brenna Webb, who worked at NFL Network with all of us. And she's been with me on this football journey. She's my football person. And we were just looking at each other in that moment of just sheer, like, out of body experience. And you're like, this is what that feels like. I'm so used to watching somebody go through it and not know what to say to then have it happen to you is really pretty cool. Obviously.
How does this time feel different from last time? Because it's not like you haven't gone through this before. You have.
Oh my gosh. Well, last time I about got in a fight with some woman in the box next to us, you know, who had a whistle because it was in New Orleans and they all had brought in whistles for that game. And it was the loudest game I think I've ever been to. That one was obviously, it came down to a kick. And so you have that just build up, and then just explosion. This kind of you had a little bit more time to let it sink in, but to have it be in your building and to have, you know, the last couple of years go by and you know now how hard it is to get there. You know that it's just, you are at the top of the mountain. It is different. And to, you know, to go down on the field after the game with our families and you kind of look around and you are so used to being down there just documenting it. And now you're part of it. And it's wild. I was so happy for Kevin Demoff, who's our team president, who was the one really responsible for, you know, getting us back to LA and getting this unbelievable stadium built. And then, you know, Stan Kroenke's down there and everybody just has that same like incredulous look on their face. It's pretty great.
Did it take you? So you've mentioned a few times, you know, the contrast between covering it and then experiencing it on your own. Did it take you a while at the beginning to get used to allowing yourself to be the person that's experiencing it and not holding back in that way after years of needing to be unbiased and stuff like that?
You know, I think I'm still getting used to it. I think I always have those moments where, you know, even last night I had my camera out and I was almost looking at it as if I were, you know, the person down there like, oh, look, there's Odell with his mom. I got to go over there and that's a great shot, you know? And so you still do look at it with that lens. And I'm sure my husband appreciates the fact that he gets to come home to a press conference every night, which I mean, I am, you know, and there are no holds barred. So it does take a while, but I think if you're the kind of person that goes into the business that we've both been in, that you just naturally look at it with that eye. You can't help it, even though you know, okay, wait a minute, that's my husband over there that's on the stage. And those are my kids that are celebrating with, you know, other players' kids that they've like grown up with. It's a wild thing. You do have that kind of split brain moment.
Let me go through the events of last night with you. So you're in a suite with Brenna. Okay. Down 10 in the third quarter. How are you handling it?
I was actually handling it a lot better than Brenna. I looked over at Brenna. I thought she was going to be catatonic for a minute there. But I think the good thing about this team is that there was not a moment. I mean, yes, are you nervous and you have to kind of start steeling yourself for, okay, if this doesn't happen, this is going to really be terrible. Yes, you do. But then at the same time, you're like, Les always says, he's like, two score game. If you can get it to a two score game, anything, obviously we've seen in the last couple of weeks. I mean, that game last week, how many points did they have in the fourth quarter? So you know that as long as it's within two scores, and if you have Matthew Stafford, who that is his bread and butter to come back, and you have Aaron Donald, who, can you imagine? I said it to his family. You know, I was in their box just to go say hi to them. And it was a second half of a game earlier in the year. And I was always like, to them, the second half is he's going to wear anyone down.
Yeah.
He will have it at the end of the game because he's in amazing shape. So, you know, I think it's, it's a lot to take in, you know?
But you have faith the whole time.
I did. I really did. Cause I genuinely thought that they were going to figure it out. And I said to Stan on the field after the game, I said, you know, you just sat there and we're like top to bottom. We have the people, we have them to do this. So you don't sit there and worry that you don't have enough to get it done. But you do know when it's a team in our division, you do know that it's going to be this heavyweight fight at all times.
And then obviously the narrative from the last week being that the Niners have obviously had the Rams number and six straight and, you know, all of these stats and like how much now in retrospect that it's passed, how much does that wear on, you know, the guys surrounding the team? How much are you trying to, because to me, that feels like a puzzle. Like in a lot of ways, my thing last week was I'm like, well, the Rams, look, if I'm just looking at this as an analyst and I think that they have the advantage, I think that they're the better team, but then there's this weird X factor that I can't put my finger on that the Niners have just been able to win the games anyway, in spite of that for so long. And I think that complicates it. And I would imagine that if you're the person that's even in charge of the team, you know, like a Les or a Sean, that complicates it too, because what makes sense in your brain isn't necessarily what's happening in those games.
Well, I think too, and Les says it all the time, like, when you're in this league, it's a matchup league. And when you are in a division like our division, you build your team to win the division. And so that's how, the fact that we had to go through Arizona and San Francisco to get here, right? And you know them so well, but you know that they've built their team to stop you. You've built your team to stop them. But you're right. Like they're, you know, the Niners just have, they've just had something on us. But I do think those guys going into that game last night, like that does give you that extra little bit of fuel. And, that last game, similar to when, you know, the Giants and the Patriots, when, you know, the Giants second Super Bowl run, similar kind of thing, that last game of the season, like, if we don't lose that game to the Niners, does this happen? You don't know, right? Like you don't know if that was a beneficial loss in some way where you figured something out, where you now sent this really tough team on the road to go deal with Green Bay and then have to come back to you. So in some ways you're like, okay, maybe that last loss of the season was actually beneficial to us. And that we helped us figure something out. But it is, it's always going to be that kind of puzzle when you're playing the teams in your division. And, you know, it's always something like this small that makes the difference in the end.
What do you think was the difference this time?
I think after the last game, I think they probably had a moment that were like, okay, if we get to play them again, we're going to keep the pedal down. We're going to keep the pedal down. And you know, when you play Kyle, when Kyle and Sean play each other, they're such like strategic, intelligent football coaches that you're always going to have that chess match. And I think we were like, okay, we may have let off a little bit and we're not going to do that this time because there's just too much at stake. And we've got too many people in this building that you just don't want to let down. They were not going to let down all of these guys, especially Aaron Donald, you know, coming into this game. And there's a great story, and I don't know if this is out there. So this is kind of cool. Last week they were gonna have a practice, and they were gonna do just a small amount in pads, just to do some run fits and that kind of stuff. And Aaron Donald was like, we're going pads, and we're gonna like. So you know that playing San Francisco, you have to play them tough. And so Aaron Donald taking that leadership role of saying, you know what, like, we know we're about to get into, let's make sure that we're really ready for it, which I thought was pretty cool.
The fact that that game happened on the 1 year anniversary of the Stafford trade too. I mean, it's like, talk about a Hollywood script, the whole thing. And then the fact that it's the Bengals coming up next. I mean, just the whole thing is like, you know, you couldn't have scripted it better for a Super Bowl that's going to happen in Los Angeles.
Oh, and there were layers and layers to it, right? Like I was talking to Melissa Whitworth last night on the field, Andrew Whitworth's wife, and she's amazing. And we were very close. And she was like, do you realize that because they were obviously they were down in Mexico when the Staffords were down there. And that was part of the whole thing, that they happened to be there when the Staffords were down in Mexico last year, when the trade ended up happening.
The Whitworths were also?
They were also down there because they go to the same place. And so she's like, you realize that all of this happened within like 5 minutes of each other. Like it was like 7:43, let's say, last night when we won, and it was 7:48 when the trade happened and went through. Like it was like that granularly, like that same amount of time, 365 days later. And so, yeah, that's crazy. Like even little things, Lindsay, like, so I blew out my Achilles over the summer about 6 weeks before Cam Akers did. So I have been marveling at what he's been able to do. Marveling, because it is such a difficult thing to come back and have any physical activity, much less go play a football game. But so our team doctor, who's Neil Eletrosh, who's the greatest, does, you know, he's done everybody's surgeries over the year, and he's so good. He did Cam's Achilles surgery. He did Joe Burrow's knee surgery. So you have these two comeback players of the year playing in the game in the Super Bowl against each other. How about, you know, I don't know, Andrew Whitworth playing against the Bengals?
Right. That's one of the first, when I saw him up on stage. Well, after the Bengals won, that was one of the first things I thought of, was like, this could be like the Whitworth Bowl, you know, his two teams.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, to never have won a playoff game with them, and now you're playing them in the Super Bowl, and, you know, at over 40 years old. I mean, it's to your point, like you could not script better. And then you see some of the characters that we have too, that are going to fill in all of those great swaggy roles, right? Like, you know, the Odells and the Von Millers and the whole thing. It's just it's going to be a fun Super Bowl for people to cover.
Yeah. Well, the only investment that I have had in the last decade is that Tom Brady is not in the Super Bowl for that reason, right? Like, because I'm like, the only thing I don't want to happen is to revisit all of the exact same storylines that we've had to talk about for 2 weeks every single year for a decade. So the freshness of this is incredibly appealing. There's so many different directions that you can go in. And this is a week where a lot of people that don't get a lot of attention will now get attention. Like, we're going to spend time talking about, you know, like the Tyler Higbees of the world and people like that, who usually are a little bit lower on the food chain in terms of national coverage. And all of these stories are going to come to the surface. And And I think we're in for a really fun couple of weeks. How much fun, having gone through it before, is just the buildup to the Super Bowl, like winning the NFC championship so that you now know that your team is going to be in the spotlight for that 2 weeks. And you get to experience that anticipation of going, you know, the buildup to the big game. What is that like?
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be more fun than it was last time, because it is, it's like planning a wedding. I mean, the second, you know, the clock hits zero, your phone starts buzzing with people wanting tickets, right? And you got to get tickets. And, you know, so last time, I mean, by the time I got to the game, I was so exhausted and just, I was like, what a just miserable thing to go through in some ways. And you're like, this is so awesome. And yet I just want to go to bed because I've just been planning everybody's party for a week. So I think that what you do realize is when you've gone through the whole process once, how much that actually does help. Because when you were a team going through it the first time, all of the pressure points that come on all the players and their families, and why am I, you know, why am I at this hotel versus that hotel? Like, and everybody has to deal with all that stuff. It's a lot. Thank goodness they have put this week in between the championship game and the Super Bowl for that reason, so people can just deal. But it is hard to go through all of that for the first time and regulate and know, okay, you know, how much do the players have to pace themselves, and how much do they go out and do certain things and not? And so I think having the amount of experience that we do now on our team is going to make a huge difference. But it is a fun thing to know that you're going to spend the next 2 weeks like still talking about football. I mean, when it ends so dramatically, you know, it's devastating. So to now know that there's only one game left is pretty great.
What do you think, or, you know, have they talked about specifically, like a Les and a Sean, that they would do differently this time in the buildup to that?
You know, I don't know if they've talked specifically what they would do about the buildup. I think from, you know, the good thing about our building, and I mean that by like the football building and the facility, is they are so all about football that they don't let. And I think that's what you see when people are like, you know, what is it about this culture that allows guys to come in and blossom in it, where they might have not necessarily other places, or people thought that it wasn't going to work. And it's because when you walk in that football building with the Rams, like, it is all football all the time. And, you know, so I think people, like, especially veterans, understand that when they come in that building. So Sean was really good about that last time, about keeping everybody focused on the game. Now you're going to go play, you know, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. And they've been there so many times before. Of course, I'm sure there are things that you've now learned that you would do differently in the buildup. But I think in general, I think there's not much they're going to have to change.
Yeah. The LA fan base, what was it like to be in that building last night? There was a lot of talk in the buildup to it, and watching on TV, there's a lot of red. I'm an LA person, right? Like, I am an LA girl. So I get the football landscape here. I think a lot of people nationally do not. As somebody who was not an LA girl for a very long time, that is now really at the heart of this whole Rams football experience, what would you say to people who say that, like, the Rams don't have a fan base, or that this isn't a football town? Like, what is your observation about that?
I was really lucky to get to give away a bunch of tickets, you know, buy some standing room only tickets to get people in the building. And so I was communicating a lot with so many fans over the course of this last week. You know, we call it the Ramley. Mm-hmm. And there are so many amazing, amazing Rams fans that, you know, are obviously going to get priced out of a game like that. And I think that's a big part of it, right? Like, you're always trying to figure out, how do we get our real fans into a building when this is such a big game? And there are other people that are going to be able to, you know, go on and buy tickets. And Kelly Stafford obviously did an amazing job, you know, buying tickets for people. But when you really communicate with those hardcore fans who are that diehards, you really, like, there's a lot of heart to the football fans in LA. But we're not naive to the fact that, I mean, when you've been gone for a generation, it's going to take a little bit to build back up to what you would have if you were in, you know, some of these other towns. And I don't think anyone's naive to that. I think what we've done this year is going to be a big step towards that, you know, next year. And you and I both know that the league's already figuring out how do we schedule the Niners and the Rams for week one, right? In our building again. I could just see them doing that. But were we like, do you get a little bummed when you look out at a championship game when you've been to other ones? Like I've been to, you know, when the one in New Orleans and it's 98% Saints fans. Of course you do. Like, of course you would love to look down and have it be all blue. But the best part was looking down at the end of the game and it was all blue. Yeah. Right. Like you look down and you're like, there, you know, if we're going to make them come in and pay all that money and then leave, that's fine too. You know, I think this was a really strong building block to getting that fan base. And for people like you who have young kids, right? Like you see these young kids go through it for the first time and now they're Rams fans. And so, you know, you just got to keep knowing that you're still building something. And it's going to take a little bit.
Yep. I saw a lot of Rams gear at drop off this morning.
Isn't that funny how that happens, right? It's like, everybody's got this. And you're like, so those fresh threads, as they call it, right? Like, it's so funny.
Explain to me what happened at Starbucks this morning.
Oh, it was funny because Les and my best friend, who's in from out of town, who's basically his sister, they went over to get coffee. And Jen was like, it was awesome. We walked in and it was a standing ovation. It was our normal barista, Jackie, who's awesome, who's a huge Rams fan now. And, you know, there's a group of guys that are always in there in the morning doing their little coffee clatch. And it's the, you know, one guy who's the bus driver and the, you know, just the local group. And so they were all there, right? And it's the funny backstory of it, though, Lindsay, is that when we were in St. Louis, we had a running joke that we'd often have to change coffee shops because when they would figure out who Les was, then he would have to do some kind of press conference. And he's like, I just don't know if I can do this after this particular loss or after this. So you're like, okay, fine. We'll go to this other coffee shop over here. So we're like, we can finally stay at the one coffee shop. We don't have to move around coffee shops and get the, you know, the why did you do this or why did you not do that when you walk in the morning from all of the old guys that are sitting there looking at you like, what are you doing? So it's a nice full circle moment.
So I want to get your take on the narrative of this season, which is Super Bowl or bust. So now they're in the Super Bowl and I don't know if Super Bowl or bust means you have to actually win the Super Bowl or else it's a failure in people's minds or like what this whole Super Bowl or bust actually means. I had Jordan Rodrigue on the podcast earlier.
Is she not unbelievable, by the way?
She's amazing.
Yes.
And I think it was in the offseason, actually, that we talked. And the way she laid out to me what the philosophy was in the building with Les and Snead made a lot of sense to me. And I feel like I've spent every month since then trying to explain it to people and to reframe the Super Bowl or bust, because I know that that's not necessarily the way it is looked at in that building. Can you explain to me what your response is when you see the Super Bowl or bust narrative and what you think it actually, the way we should look at this?
Well, season? I think there's a couple different things in there. First of all, you know, Les would say, when you say Super Bowl or bust, he would say, well,
of course. Whom is that not true? Right.
Of course. Isn't that what we're doing here? We're not trying to, you know, just go along to get along. Like there are 32 teams and now there are two left, right? Like you are competing. Like that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to field a team that hopefully goes to the Super Bowl. That is the goal. And so that is what we have now done. And to your point about, you know, a narrative that's just going to get beaten like a, you know, dead horse over the course of 2 weeks, if I have to hear, you know, they've mortgaged their future and the all in and the, if I have to hear that one more time, I'm like, it's lazy. It's a little lazy, right? Like it is more than a little lazy. Like there is so much planning that goes into why they've picked and done what they've done. And I think the easy answer is that when you can, when you know that we're going to be picking, hopefully towards the end of the first round, and you know that that means that you're not in that same level of player that's at the top of the first round at that point, right? It starts to dilute down. Mm-hmm. And then you have someone like a Jalen Ramsey or a Matthew Stafford, and you're like, okay, what are the chances that you could get these type of players way down
at the end of the first? Yep.
Yeah. So you have now a proven commodity that you know can do what you need them to do. So that seems worth it to me, especially when you've built a team around you like we have, to know that you can, you know, add those level of pieces. It just to me, the concept of, you know, there's nothing about this. Like when people start saying all in or they're mortgaging, it sounds like it's not well thought out, that there's just this, I don't know, fly by night nature of what he's doing. And it's not that at all. And there's also, I mean, there are so many other little factors to it, like the comp formula. If you lose somebody and then you get a third round pick because they go to somebody else in free agency, that means a lot to Les. He does a lot with third round picks. So there are so many.
One guy named Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. I mean, so, and we also know that we can identify talent really well and get them in later rounds. So there's the fly by night nature of, in the risk taking that people are trying to imply sometimes when they say that mortgaging your future is bothersome to me, because that's been now going on for how many years they've been saying that, and the future's now and it seems to be working, right? Is there a risk involved in that? Yes. Do you know that it might not work out? Yes. Do you have to take risks to be, you know, 2 of 32? Yes. So risk is involved if you're going to win in this league, and you have to have the guts to do it. And so I think that's what I admire most about Les when I watch him pull these things off, because I'm always amazed, like everybody else is, how in the world were you able to get that done? And he is so thoughtful about when he takes big risks and takes those big swings. And it's just fun to see it actually, you know, play out this way.
How has he reframed the way that you look at it all, like team building and football in general?
That is, I mean, how long do you have, right? I mean, when you live it and you see how much work goes in, that's what, you know, obviously there's the meme going around about picks with Les, right? And, you know, that he doesn't care about it. And what's funny is I think people actually think he said that, even players on our team.
Really?
It's been circulated so much. It's become almost like this urban myth. I'm like, he didn't actually say that, guys. Like, not at all. He loves those picks. But, you know, when you live through, like him going through the process of when somebody is kind of, there's potential of them being available and him trying to figure out, it's like, I joke with him sometimes. He looks like when you have a kid trying to, you know, go around the house and find quarters to go, you know, buy a pizza or something. He's always sitting there figuring it out in his head. Like, how can I possibly make this happen? And then for some reason, he manages to pull it off almost all of the time. But the team building part of it, what you do realize is there is a, you know, similar to when I covered the Patriots and there was like a Patriot way, there is a Rams type of player. And it's somebody who loves, passionate about playing football, but then also loves to play for the guy next to them. And that's what I love most of all when I watch this team, is that you see them play for each other. And they really, really do. And so when you get a core group of guys that want to do that, I mean, how can you not want to play for Cooper Kupp, right?
Right.
And you see guys come in and they're not used to that. And then they're like, he can't be for real, right? Like that he's that humble and that good. And he is, and that's contagious. And so, and it's more fun to do we, not me. It really is. So when they start, you know, coming into our, so that part of the team building and having done it brick by brick by brick. I mean, when we started this, when I retired to, you know, when Les and I were going to get married and I retired from my job because of it, like starting from there where they were in 32nd place by like a long, you know, margin, to see all the little bricks get put in place, right? So you have, you know, I think Johnny Hecker's probably the longest tenured, you know, Ram at this point. And then you see us go and you have Aaron Donald and you start building this thing from the bottom up. And then it changes over time what you need as you kind of build this thing. And then to have, you know, all of the random things too, Lindsay, that, that happened that ended up working to our advantage. Like the, when they were building the stadium, I mean, that thing got flooded. And so we couldn't complete it when we wanted to. So they had to push the Super Bowl back a year. Well,
yeah.
Didn't that work out?
Oh,
so it's just, you see that, you see how methodical it is. So when, you know, when people want to make it sound like we're just taking these wild swings at things, you're like, no, no, no. You have to methodically build something so that when you have an opportunity to really take a swing at something, you can do it. And you have the people around you who let you do that too. I mean, I can't say enough about having an organization that allows you to go take some, you know, some risks and allows you to package those picks and go get these guys. And to know that your culture is going to support it when you get these big time players coming into your building. So it's such a methodical thing to then be able to be put in a position where you can take a run at Matthew Stafford. I mean, how in the world does a quarterback of that caliber, you know, end up on your team, right?
Right.
Like it doesn't happen. So it's been fun to watch the methodical nature that it, that you go through to get to this point.
You know, it's funny you mentioned those transitionary years of like the, you know, the last few years in St. Louis and then the first couple of years in Los Angeles. I remember at around that time you came back to NFL Network and were working behind the scenes, like in charge of talent. And I remember at that time there being conversations that are just normal conversations that you have at a network like that, where people are calling for people's heads and putting people on the hot seat and things weren't going so well for the Rams. And I think it was a little bit uncomfortable for probably all parties involved because everybody loved you. But at that time, people were highly critical of Les. And to know now, looking back, what we know, how silly sometimes those conversations can be and how circumstantial things are. What was that time like for you?
That was a, it was, you know, and Les would be the first person to say like, well, yeah, I mean, if you don't win, you should be fired. And, you know, I ended up retiring for the second time at NFL Network. It was a, that was a 4-12 season, you know, and so you have to go in, we start 3-1 and then you have to go in. I mean, like, you, all you want to do is hide under a rock when all of a sudden you go into these tailspins, right? Like it's really, really emotionally like brutal. So you have to walk in the door of NFL Network on Monday and watch the game. Just, it's like you're walking in with a scarlet letter on your chest and it's a big L, right? And so that was a really like hard season to live through. But I also, and when I stepped away the second time, it was a lot for that reason, because I was like, if I'm in charge of reporters, they need to not feel like they're the person that's making some of the decisions about them, right? That they can't talk, you know, say whatever they need to say about her husband's team. So it was a challenging thing, but I never wanted it to interfere. You know, I mean, you and I are the same this way. Like I am fun and you know, I can act like an idiot on Twitter now being on the other side of things. But when you're a serious journalist and you want people to be able to do their jobs, especially at NFL Network, you know, the way they should and not have to think in the back of their mind, can I say this, right? Can I do this? And we went into a meeting And I looked up on the board, and to your point, it was like planning, because you have to plan for Black Monday, right? Like, you know, all these coaches and GMs are going to get fired. And you look up on the board and it's like they're listing the teams that they may have to send reporters to and deal with. And it's like, well, yeah, it's right there. So that was the meeting that I let them all know that I was going to leave. And I said, and if you need to know why, you just turn around and look at the board, right? Like, you guys need to be able to do that.
Did you make that decision in the meeting, or had you already thought you were going to do that?
I already knew it, because I started to see that it was going to cause, you know, people were almost like reporters, like apologizing to me for saying things that are just not like, you know, fly off the handle opinions, like truthful statements. Is that you should never have to apologize to me for that. Like, that I would do the same thing if I were in your position, but I didn't want people to have to feel that way. And quite honestly, we thought we could very well get fired. Right. So I was at that point having to turn to, okay, I need to go be a wife and a mom. I've got kids who have to go and deal with it at school. And we had the meeting, Les and I sat down and said, there's a really good chance we're going to get fired. Like, let's bring the kids in and talk to them about it. And, you know, to Kevin Demoff's credit, to Stan Kroenke's credit, like, they said, you know what, let's give Les a little bit of time and let's see, you know, how he potentially gels with the new coach. And Les was like, I'm going to do the best I can for the Rams. And if that means that I help you hire a coach that then fires me, that's what I'm supposed to do. But as soon as you met Sean, I'll never forget when he came home and told me, he's like, you're not going to believe it. We're going to hire the 30-year-old from Washington. And I'm like, come on, get out of here. There's no way. 30. I'm like, I probably have genes older than that at this point. And as soon as you met Sean, like within 2 seconds, you knew. And I was there. It was me and Les and Sean and Marshall Faulk, who, as you know, is one of the smartest football people you will ever meet in your life. And when Marshall gave the thumbs up, I was like, oh, yeah, he's really good if Marshall's giving him the thumbs up. So that was a ride. That was a ride.
What's the lesson that the rest of us on the outside should take away from that? Because the contrast seems so stark to me. And it seems now that we know what Les has been able to build. And I mean, the shots of him on the sideline, like, I was at a friend's house watching the game and I'm like, that is the reason right there. Like, Sean gets credit, but like, Les has done incredible things. And the way that he's, that whole building has reframed the way that they even like approach the combine and scouting and evaluation and the willingness now that we're hiring general managers around the league and we're talking about what's a good general manager. And to me, it is completely like a willingness to come to the table with some level of expertise, but then be totally open to somebody with a different type of expertise. And I think that the Rams and Les and that the way that they've agreed to throw things that they've long held like beliefs out the window when new information comes to the table is, I think that's the model. And
oh, you're 1,000% correct. Like, you nailed it. He is not normative. He's not. So, you know, just like I would say Sean is one of one, I don't know how easily you could replicate, you know, Les in the way he thinks. He does not care what the outside world thinks. He genuinely doesn't read a single thing. He will only do things that make sense. So, for example, when they decided that they weren't going to go to all the things at the combine, and everybody's like, what do you mean you're not doing that? And he's like, but we don't need to. And then everybody else is looking at each other like, then why do we need to? They don't need to. And so it's a really interesting thing, but he has, he just has this courage to kind of swim upstream if that makes sense to him. And he doesn't care if everybody else is doing something completely different, which I admire so greatly, because I am like, man, I care too much what people think to be able to pull off the way that he does that. And it's infectious in the building, and people know that they are licensed to take risk when their competency says, you know, we should do this differently. Reggie Scott, who is, I'm not sure what his title is now, it's probably vice president of performance, who's our trainer, who deserves as much credit as can possibly be had for this run. When you see what happened with someone like Cam Akers, it's because of Reggie and his training staff, but he has been given license to do things so differently. And Les will say, go do your thing however you want to do it. And everybody holds each other accountable. And it's almost like there's this notion of, okay, there's no egos in our building. I mean, everybody has egos, but there really are just standards. And the standard is, let's do what's best. It doesn't matter how everybody else is doing it. And to have it work is really, really interesting and cool. Because to your point, this is a copycat league. So now everybody's going to be trying to figure out, how do we do that? That's what I said to Les. I said, all of a sudden they're hiring all these young general managers who are all going to be trying to take these, you know, home run swings. And it'll be fun to watch over the next couple of years how it changes things.
Last thing, what's the snapshot from last night that you'll remember most?
There's so many, you know, but what was great, and it was probably my favorite picture that I had on Twitter of all of our people that were in the box with us. And it was Andrew Siciliano, who was with me when I, you know, was hosting Total Access and then decided to retire. And he went through that whole process with me. And I would get emotional even thinking about it, because he was like my rock through that. You have Rich Eisen, who has been my friend since I was 23 years old as a production assistant at ESPN, with his wife, Susie, there with us. And we're looking at each other like, my God, remember when we were at the Super Bowl and it was our first Super Bowl with NFL Network, and we were like, we didn't know what we were doing, and we're standing across from each other in the field because we had hardwired mics and they didn't make the lines long enough. So Rich and I couldn't get to any of the players to interview them. We just were standing, staring at each other, like on opposite sidelines of the field at the Super Bowl. Like, what are we doing? And I'm 4 months pregnant with my son now, who's in the picture with us, who's 17, right? And there with all of his friends. And so Marshall Faulk was up there with us. And so we've gone on this Rams journey together. And so it's like, it goes back to the people, you know, and that's what the snapshot is that you take away. It's like, the game is so amazing, but it's the people and how it impacts people. And it's just, man, you go down in the field and, you know, I see Andrew Whitworth, because of course you see him, he's giant. And I go over to him and I'm like, can you believe we're playing the Bengals? And his, you know, first thing is like, where's my wife? Like, where are my wife and kids? And you see Mel Whitworth, who has been through all of this with him in an amazing way, you know, come running in with all of their kids. And so it's Odell hugging his mom, you know, and having such a just genuine moment. So it's Aaron Donald with his kids, who I remember when they were born. Mm-hmm. And here they are at 8 and 10 years old. So it's the people, you know, for all of us, for every fan that was tweeting me videos, you know, that's it. And that's what this sport does more than anything I've ever been around. And I think that's why we all love it the way we do. It's the people.
Carrie, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Oh, I hope I made some semblance of sense, Lindsay, you know, 4 hour sedation. 4 hour sedation is,
You do well after 4 hours of sedation, much better than I, my friend.
Oh, you're awesome. It was great talking to you. And I love the fact that you're raising a Rams fan. Smart woman.
Whose house?
Rams house.
And you can follow Kara on Twitter at Kara Henderson. And I think that she'll be a really fun follow for the next couple of weeks in particular, as will our next guest, longtime LA Times reporter, currently covering the Rams' day-to-day activities, Gary Klein, will join us after this.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad the Big Noise Evans from the Sawdust Podcast Network. Throughout the week, we're providing you with a vast array of betting and fantasy insight, advice, and analysis. Check out our library of podcasts, including Fade the Noise with me and the good sir Nathaniel Lundy, Fantasy Fast Track with me and Brandon Fun Buns Funston, Annie Up with Howard Bender and Adam Ronis, and Sticks and Stacks with Sean Drotar. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts, or listen on the SXM app, free for most subscribers.
Gary, it's great to see you. It's been a while. Context for the people that are listening. Gary and I spent many a days together on the sidelines of USC practices and games back in the Pete Carroll days there. So I'm curious to know if this experience covering this team mirrors that one in any way, both of them operating obviously in a high expectation space for the last few years anyway.
Yeah, I think the years I spent covering USC, a total of 14 years, really prepared me for the jump to the NFL because, Lindsay, as you know, having been there, everything that could possibly happen on and off the field happened at USC. And so the transition to the NFL with that as a background was really great for me. I think it's almost like I was covering college football and now I'm covering these players in grad school. That's how I kind of looked at it because they're not that much older.
Yeah. Well, we joked before we started this that, you know, we did cover the pro team in LA back then.
You know, with all that was going on, again, on and off the field at USC, they really were the centerpiece of the sports landscape in Los Angeles. Of course, the Dodgers and the Lakers. But USC during those years really dominated locally and nationally. And to see what's happening now with college athletes being able to market their services and the transfer portal, it really has turned into more of a real pro football kinds of situation.
Well, I'm curious to know your take on the Rams and how they have cut into the fan base in the last few years. As somebody who's covered football in LA for a very long time, you obviously are aware of, you know, there was no NFL team here. There were football fans, most certainly. How have you seen the landscape from a fan standpoint change in the last couple of seasons?
Well, I think it's starting to change, but I think that's why it was so important that the Rams really made this commitment, really a mandate, to play in the Super Bowl at SoFi Stadium. They are going to have 2 weeks to saturate this market. And it really is, as you know, in Los Angeles, if you're not winning championships, people are going to turn the other way. They're going to go to the Lakers. They're going to go to the Dodgers. And so the Rams really have an opportunity of really developing fans. And I think going out and getting all those star players, however they're going to, you know, mortgaging their future, sign free agents and trade for players. That's really, I think, the way they have to do it in Los Angeles because the fans want stars. They want recognizable names. And I think this is a golden opportunity for the Rams to really grab that and establish themselves as a viable contender for attention with the Lakers and the Dodgers.
You mentioned the mortgaging our future theme to this season. Do you think that they have actually done that with the moves that they've made?
Lindsay, I don't think they have. I think the Rams have adopted a style where they're going to be like the New York Yankees of yesteryear, and they're going to go out and get the players they need regardless of the cost. I think there will be some ebbs and flows as they go on. And there will be times when we're all sitting there going, you see, you needed those first round draft picks. But I think you really have to look at it. The way they look at it is, can you get a quarterback like Matthew Stafford? Is he worth 2 first round draft picks? Probably he is, given that they're in the Super Bowl. Should you give up 2 first round draft picks to get a cornerback like Jalen Ramsey? Well, given how he's performed, he's probably worth it. So I think that's the way they're going to go moving forward. And I think they're very comfortable with it.
I mean, the perfect snapshot of that, right, was the end of the game in terms of how they've built the team with Aaron Donald forcing the fumble and then Travis Howard, a 7th round pick from 2018, landing on the ball, kind of the entire picture of how they've approached team building in terms of getting a few game changing stars and then putting people around them who specifically complement those people that they've picked to spend a lot of money on. And I think that they've been able to isolate the people around those people really well. So obviously that speaks to their evaluation process. And if they can maintain that, right, and keep hitting on those guys, I kind of think that that's where the whole thing falls apart, is if they start missing on some of those people.
That's right. And they've been very fortunate. Now, Cooper Kupp is arguably the NFL Offensive Player of the Year. He was a 3rd round pick. A year ago or 2 years ago, if we were having this conversation, he'd be one of those supporting players, right, that needs to develop into a star player. And he has. Jordan Fuller, who's not going to be able to play in the Super Bowl, but a late round draft pick is their starting safety and their defensive signal caller. So they need to kind of be consistently making those right picks. And they've hit the two guys I mentioned there. They hit on those. They've had some that they missed on, just like every team. But if they're going to continue to do this with adding star players every year or every few years, they're going to need those middle of the roster guys to also step up.
Stafford obviously has carried a lot of weight this year, being the star of the Super Bowl or bust narrative that everyone's run with. How have you seen him handle that up close?
Well, he's handled it, I think, very similarly to how he's handled the last two fourth quarters with the Rams. He's been very poised. He's very professional. You know, he doesn't let his guard down much in terms of media on an everyday basis. He doesn't reveal a lot of himself. And I think, you know, he knows what if he says something very provocative, he knows what's going to happen. So we don't really get to see that too much. But I think as a guy who's been around the league, he's been waiting for this opportunity, you know, for more than a decade. He's watched Tom Brady get opportunities with great teams. He's watched Drew Brees, you know, experience that. And all the while, he's off in Detroit throwing for a lot of yards, but for everyone saying the Lions are never, you know, going to give him that chance. So he's got that chance now, and he seems very comfortable in the position he's in with the opportunity that's awaiting.
Tell me about Aaron Donald and what you've observed about him. And we all see what he does on the field and the ways in which he can change a game. How does he change things for the team outside of the obvious ways that he requires double teams and things like that?
Aaron, I think by nature is a kind of a quiet guy, loves to joke around. We see a little bit of that. And, you know, but I think his first maybe 6-7 years, you know, he was able to kind of be the wingman, if you will, of Michael Brockers. Michael Brockers and some other players with the Rams really were the more face of the team in terms of handling media and whatnot. Aaron would do that, but you didn't really get to see a lot of his personality. And I think as he's gotten older, and now Brockers is no longer here, I think that he's really stepped up. And if you listen to teammates, especially these last few weeks, he's been on a drive to get back to the Super Bowl. He's a guy that's been celebrated. He's won 3 NFL Defensive Player of the Year awards. He's got all the recognition and money. Well, I don't know if he's got all the money he wants, but I'm sure he'll have it. And he just wants a Super Bowl. You know, he wants that to complete his resume. And that really has been a rallying point, I think, for all of the you know, players on the Rams. They want to win one for him. In the game against the 49ers, he's the guy that brought them together on the sideline and talked to the defense about stepping up. We need to do more. And they played really well in the fourth quarter. So I think as he's gotten older, he's taken on more of that leadership role. And when he talks, they listen.
Who else are the glue pieces on this team that maybe we don't talk about as much as some of those big name guys that we just mentioned?
I think Cooper Kupp is one of those guys. Not so much because he's vocal, but because everyone respects the way he goes about it. You know, Robert Woods, who we both covered for a long time, you know, through USC, unfortunately for him, he suffered a season-ending knee injury, but he's one of those glue guys. And that was a question when he went out, whether they were going to be able to kind of sustain that without him. Odell Beckham Jr. has come in and, you know, to the surprise, I think, of many on the outside, has supplied some of that in terms of the way he goes about it. But in terms of the guys that are actually there and have been there, Andrew Whitworth at 40, you know, I don't think he's the left tackle he was, you know, a few years ago, but he's still starting and he's still with that guy that people look to. Eric Weddle is another guy.
You know, how in the world? That's my favorite story from the last couple of weeks, honestly. Like every time he's near the ball, I get this surge of pride that I have no business feeling. I don't even know him, but like I just love Eric Weddle. I did when he played, his style, his swag, all of it. But the fact that he's playing after that long a period of time away from the game, how has he reacclimated the way that he has? He was their leading tackler on Sunday.
Yeah, Lindsay, I think more players are going to think about playing off-season basketball and snowboarding as a way of getting into shape, because they worked him in kind of slowly, right? Against the Cardinals, I think he only played 19 snaps. He played a lot against the Buccaneers. And yesterday he started. And as you mentioned, he's the leading tackler. So he's you know, quite a story. And he's one of those guys, you know, Jalen Ramsey stumped for him to come back. You know, he wanted him there. And so he's another guy, you know, that I think in a late addition kind of way is a glue guy, if you will. So they have a couple of those, and then they, and they have the young players that follow them and the veterans that also look to them. And, you know, so far it's worked. We'll see if it will through the Super Bowl.
Is there a point in the season, having experienced it from start to finish with this team, that you look at now and say that was probably a turning point for them? Because the Rams, like frankly, this season, that it was that kind of year. Everyone outside of the Packers kind of had a little bit of a roller coaster. All the good teams had these lulls and these dips, and the Rams were obviously a team that had that too. Is there a moment that you look back at, or a game, and you say that was very important that they went through that?
Well, I think, you know, they started 7-1. They looked like a Super Bowl contender. Matt Stafford looked like, you know, an MVP candidate. And then they hit that stretch where they played the Tennessee Titans, the 49ers, and the Packers. And those three teams really pushed them around. You know, they showed the Rams, and I think they showed the NFL, that there's a formula for beating this team. If you go right at them, if you really challenge all those stars and you run the ball. And I think after the Rams lost to the Packers, there was a shift by circumstance, because Darrell Henderson was a little banged up, and Sean McVay really committed to a running game, and Sony Michel got, you know, became the featured back. And for the next five games, all of which they won, that's kind of what they built themselves on. And it started with, you know, a rout of the Jaguars. But I think that was kind of the turning point for the Rams, where they made a commitment to, we're going to be a physical team too. We're going to be able to stand up to these teams that try and go right at us. And they won five in a row. They lost, you know, the season finale to the 49ers, but they really got what they wished for. It couldn't have worked out better, right? They get the 49ers knock off the Packers. The Rams don't have to go to Green Bay, and they get the NFC Championship game at home against the team that they lost to six times in a row. So, and they got to show, you know, we can finally end this misery against them and go to the Super Bowl at the same time.
Last week, what were your observations about how they were approaching that specific matchup? Because, you know, did you sense any kind of like, oh no, it's them and they're the team that has our number? Or was it more like that is exactly who I wanted, because we have to get this monkey off our back?
I think, you know, that was their storyline, was we're, you know, we got exactly who we wanted. We're ready for this. You know, they're not, we don't think about the losing streak or anything like that. So I think it was real. I mean, in their back of their minds, I think on some level, unless they could completely block it out, they had to be thinking, wow, you know, we have got to get over this hump. Something's got to play in our favor. But I think they did get the matchup they wanted in terms of getting to prove it against the 49ers and actually, you know, parlaying a home game in the NFC Championship game into a home date in the Super Bowl.
In terms of the Bengals, looking ahead at that matchup, and I know I'm asking you way in advance, like you're still recovering from yesterday in the NFC Championship game. What are some of the storylines that you will be interested in trying to follow through on and tell in the next couple of weeks?
Well, of course, Zach Taylor, you know, the coach of the Bengals, who's turned them around, you know, so quickly, was an assistant of Sean McVay's. So that storyline will be, you know, interesting to follow. Joe Burrow, of course, is a big story that everyone, you know, will be looking at. A really dynamic young quarterback. I'm really interested in digging deeper into their roster, because it's not a roster of no names. You know, they have some established players that are, you know, really, really good. But compared to the Rams and all that star power, these guys are, you know, For LA fans, especially, you know, it's like, who are these guys? You know? And so I think it's always fun, actually circling back to, like, you know, my days covering USC. That's what was fun about college football, is you got to tell those stories a lot of times for the first time. You got to introduce people to who these people are. And I think the Bengals on a certain level are like that. So mining those stories should be fun for me and everyone on our staff that will have that assignment.
The contrast between these two teams and the Rams with the expectations that everyone had for them coming into this season. If you don't win the Super Bowl, then this is a lost year and a failure. And then the Bengals, who Vegas had pegged for 6.5 wins at the beginning of the season. I mean, you couldn't have a starker contrast in terms of expectations for the two teams in the Super Bowl coming into the year.
Yeah. Watching the AFC Championship game, you know, I was thinking like, okay, you know, Chiefs versus Rams would be, you know, really the marquee matchup, right? You know, everyone wants to see Patrick Mahomes. The game without Patrick Mahomes in it could have, you know, is what everyone wants to see. But the Bengals really make for a really a David and Goliath kind of storyline. And I think the Rams, to some degree, relieved some of the pressure by getting to the Super Bowl. Okay, they are there now. If they had not made it, that really would have been a lost season. The fact that they're in the game now, you know, they still need to win it to fulfill that. But I think the matchup against the Bengals presents such a contrast that it'll make for, hopefully, some good drama.
Gary Klein, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Lindsay.
And you can find Gary and links to Gary's work on Twitter at LA Times Klein, one of the many talented people who will be on the ground in LA tracking the Rams and Bengals every move. And again, we'll talk about what that will look like from a Bengals point of view on Thursday, and I hope that you will join us for that. Also hoping to get an update from Mobile, as one of my favorite weeks on the NFL calendar is underway there, Senior Bowl, which means we are officially in draft season, and the amount of happiness that that brings me is just stupid. I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, we would really appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star rating, and also a review would be helpful. Also, if you could subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcasts. I've got a lot of asks today. Could you do that and this and that? The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app, which is free for most Sirius subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram at LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM podcast network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer, and a special thanks to SiriusXM's Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen. All right, Super Bowl 56, 2 weeks of coverage underway. We'll be back here on Thursday with more on the Bengals. Hope you'll join us then.
SiriusXM Podcasts.